Imagine a CEO, right? They step up to a podium to announce the company's quarterly earnings.
Right. Big moment.
Huge moment. And they're looking at this highly polished interactive dashboard on their tablet. So based on those numbers, they confidently announce a $50 million expansion into a new market.
Wow. Okay.
Okay? And the stock surges, the board applauds, everyone's happy. But there is a massive invisible problem.
There usually is.
Exactly. Because 3 weeks earlier, deep inside the company's server architecture, a single automated data script dropped a decimal point while pulling currency conversions from a European subsidiary.
Oh no, that's a nightmare.
Right. So the dashboard isn't showing a record-breaking profit at all. It's showing a catastrophic miscalculation. And the CEO is just flying blind into a hurricane, and they don't even know it.
You know, that scenario is literally keeping executives awake at night globally.
I bet.
Seriously. I mean, we've spent the last decade repeating that old cliche, you know, data is the new oil.
Right, like just having it makes you rich.
Yep. Exactly. Assuming that merely hoarding petabytes of customer clicks, sensor readings, and transaction logs just automatically creates value. But raw data in its natural state is, it's actually incredibly toxic.
Toxic.
Yeah, it's a messy, unstructured, error-prone swamp.
Which perfectly brings us to the unsung heroes who actually prevent these multi-million dollar catastrophes. Today, we are pulling apart a really fascinating, highly specific 2026 guide from Azure Trainings.
Right, that's a subsidiary of Brawley Academy, yeah.
Yep, exactly. And this document isn't just some broad overview of cloud computing. It is a laser-focused snapshot of the booming Azure data engineer job market right now.
And specifically anchored in Hyderabad.
Right. And what's our mission for this deep dive? Whether you are a tech veteran looking at your next career pivot, or you're just intensely curious about the invisible digital plumbing that keeps our world functioning, we're going to decode the reality of this job.
It's going to be a fun one.
For sure. We'll figure out what an Azure data engineer actually builds, why Hyderabad is suddenly the absolute center of gravity for this profession, the specific toolkit you need in 2026, and how the financial rewards actually scale.
There's a lot of ground to cover.
Okay, let's unpack this, starting with the core mechanics. What is an Azure data engineer actually doing all day to prevent that CEO from making a disastrous decision?
Well, fundamentally, they are building and maintaining what the industry calls data pipelines.
Data pipelines. Okay.
Yeah, but the best way to visualize a data pipeline isn't, it's not like a physical pipe. It's more like an automated, highly complex transit and filtration system.
Like a water treatment plant or something.
Kind of. Because a modern enterprise might have data coming in from, I don't know, 100 different directions at once.
Yeah, give me an example.
Sure. So you have the mobile app generating user behavior logs. Then you have the sales database tracking revenue, plus a customer support portal logging complaints.
Oh, and maybe even physical IoT sensors on a factory floor somewhere.
Exactly. So the data engineer builds the architecture that continuously collects all that chaotic information, forces it through rigorous cleaning protocols, and deposits it securely into centralized storage.
Storage like data lakes or data warehouses, right?
Precisely.
Now, the guide heavily references the acronyms ETL and ELT: extract, transform, and load.
Yeah, those are the bread and butter.
So I get the extract part. You're pulling the data from the source, and load just means putting it into storage. But let's pause on transform. What is actually happening in the transformation phase that makes it so critical?
I mean, transformation is where the actual engineering magic happens. When you pull data from 50 different systems, none of it matches.
Because it's all built by different people.
Exactly. One system might log dates as month, day, year. Another system, built by a completely different vendor, logs it as day, month, year.
Ah, I see where this is going.
Right. Or one database measures revenue in yen and another in US dollars. If you just dump all of that into a single spreadsheet and ask a business analyst to find the total,
The system will crash.
it'll crash. Or worse, it will silently give you the wrong answer, like your CEO example.
So the data engineer is essentially acting as a like a real-time universal translator and currency exchange.
That's exactly it.
They're writing the logic that says, hey, every time you see a date from system A, flip it to match system B, and check the live exchange rate to convert the yen to dollars before it hits the dashboard.
That is a perfect way to conceptualize it. They're enforcing consistency at scale, and they also handle, you know, data deduplication.
Making sure a customer who clicked a button twice isn't counted as two separate customers.
Exactly. And they handle null values, deciding what the system should do if a piece of data is just, well, missing.
I love this analogy from the text, but let's take it further. If the data scientist is the chef and the analyst is the waiter.
Oh, right, the restaurant analogy.
Yeah. The data engineer is the one who built the kitchen. They hooked up the plumbing, installed the gas lines, and basically made sure the stove doesn't explode when the chefs come in to cook.
Without them, there is no restaurant. It's just a pile of raw ingredients sitting on the floor.
That's such a great image. Okay, let's talk about geography, because this is where the source material gets highly specific.
Yeah, the Hyderabad focus.
Right. We understand what these digital kitchens look like now, but this 2026 guide is obsessed with one specific city, Hyderabad.
And for very good reason.
But if this data chaos is a universal problem for every company on Earth, why are so many of these engineers being hired in one specific zip code? What makes Hyderabad's ecosystem so unique right now?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you have to look at the physical footprint of the technology creators. Hyderabad is home to Microsoft's India Development Center.
Okay, so the mothership is there.
Exactly. When the architect of the Azure Cloud platform plants a massive permanent flag in a city, it completely alters the economic gravity of the entire region.
It creates a localized talent pool that deeply understands that specific technology.
Yep, and where the talent goes, the multinational corporations follow.
Now, the text points to a phenomenon called the GCC boom. GCC standing for Global Capability Centers.
Right.
How does a GCC differ from, you know, the traditional IT outsourcing model we've seen for the last 20 years? I mean, aren't companies doing this everywhere?
The distinction is vital. In the past, a massive global bank in London or New York would outsource their data management to a third-party IT services firm in India.
Like a vendor-client relationship.
Exactly. But a global capability center is an in-house, dedicated engineering hub.
Oh, so it's actually their own employees.
Yes. These global conglomerates are realizing that data is just way too critical to their core business strategy to hand off to a vendor.
They need to own it.
Right. So they're setting up their own corporate offices in Hyderabad, hiring thousands of internal engineers. And overwhelmingly, according to the source, they are standardizing their entire global infrastructure on Microsoft Azure.
Wow. So you have Microsoft anchored there, constantly releasing new Azure features. You have global conglomerates building massive internal engineering hubs to use those features.
And it doesn't stop there.
Right, because the guide notes that traditional IT services firms are still there too, managing multi-year legacy cloud migrations.
Yeah, taking old physical servers from companies that haven't modernized yet and dragging them into the Azure cloud.
It sounds like an absolute perfect storm for localized job density.
It creates a highly resilient microeconomy for this specific skill set. I mean, an Azure data engineer in Hyderabad is not beholden to a single industry.
They could work for anyone.
Exactly. They can build pipelines for a healthcare GCC, move to a financial services firm, or jump to a product company, all without ever leaving the Azure ecosystem or the city.
But if the demand is that intense, the barrier to entry has to be pretty high.
Oh, absolutely.
You can't just show up to a GCC with a basic understanding of Python and expect to be handed the keys to their global data architecture.
No, definitely not. The toolkit required has evolved dramatically.
The guide lists a veritable alphabet soup of technologies required in 2026. Let me read this list. Azure Data Factory, Azure Databricks, Apache Spark, Azure Synapse Analytics, Data Lake Gen 2, Delta Lake.
It's a lot to take in.
It really is. So let's ELI5 this. Explain it like I'm five. Are they just staring at SQL all day? Or how do these tools actually fit together in a daily workflow?
Well, the workflow is sequential. It moves from chaos to order.
Mm-hmm.
The everyday foundational languages are always going to be SQL and Python.
Okay, so that's the baseline.
Right. But the orchestration begins with Azure Data Factory. Think of Data Factory as the air traffic controller.
Okay, air traffic controller, what does it do?
It doesn't actually alter the data itself. It simply schedules and manages the movement. It reaches out to all those disparate sources we mentioned, pulls the raw data in, and drops it into a massive, unstructured storage pool called Azure Data Lake Storage Gen 2.
Wait, I need to stop you there. Why a data lake and not a data warehouse? What is the actual mechanical difference?
Good question. A data warehouse is highly structured. Think of it like a filing cabinet where every single folder has a strict label and format.
So it only accepts data that is already clean.
Exactly. But a data lake is exactly what it sounds like. It is a vast, cheap storage reservoir that accepts literally anything in its native format. Text files, images, raw database dumps, sensor streams.
Oh, so it just holds all the raw material until you're ready to process it.
You got it.
Got it. So Data Factory acts as the pump, pulling raw data into the data lake. What happens next?
This is where the heavy lifting occurs. To transform that massive lake of data, engineers use Azure Databricks. And Databricks is powered by an underlying engine called Apache Spark.
I see Apache Spark mentioned constantly in tech spaces.
Yeah.
But why can't they just use a really powerful, normal computer to run a Python script and clean the data? Why do we need Spark?
Because a single machine, no matter how powerful it is, will just choke and die if you ask it to process 3 terabytes of messy transaction logs.
Really? Even a super powerful one?
Oh, yeah. Apache Spark is a distributed computing framework. Instead of asking one computer to do all the work, Spark shatters the massive data set into thousands of tiny chunks.
Oh, I see.
It distributes those chunks across a cluster of dozens or even hundreds of virtual machines, processes them all simultaneously in memory, and then seamlessly stitches the results back together.
So it turns a job that would take a single server 40 hours into a job that takes 4 minutes.
Exactly. It's all about parallel processing.
That makes total sense. So Databricks and Spark are doing the heavy transformation, that universal translation we talked about earlier. Once it's clean, where does it go?
Then it moves into Azure Synapse Analytics, which acts as the structured enterprise data warehouse. And finally, it feeds into Power BI.
And Power BI is the visualization tool where the CEO actually sees the dashboard.
Right, the polished final product.
But right after outlining that entire complex chain, the guide drops a massive caveat.
Oh yeah, the fabric shift.
Yeah. It states that an architectural shift called Microsoft Fabric is currently acting as a complete game changer in 2026, and it's causing a massive talent shortage.
It really is turning the industry upside down.
But if the data factory to Databricks to Synapse pipeline works, why fix it? What pain point does Fabric actually solve?
To understand why Fabric is revolutionary, you have to understand the absolute nightmare of the old system.
Okay, lay it on me.
In the architecture we just described, an engineer had to provision Data Factory, Databricks, and Synapse as completely separate services.
Oh, so they weren't natively bundled.
Nope. They had to manually configure the security protocols for each one. They had to pay separate compute costs. And worst of all, they had to physically copy and move the data between each service.
Which creates massive duplication and lag, I'd imagine.
Exactly.
It sounds incredibly fragile, like having to run extension cords between 5 different houses just to turn on a single lamp.
That is a brilliant way to put it. And Microsoft Fabric eliminates that entirely. It is a unified analytics platform built on a single foundational storage layer called OneLake.
OneLake? Okay.
Yeah, you can think of OneLake as like one drive for the entire enterprise.
Oh, I get it.
Instead of copying data and moving it from Data Factory to Synapse, all the tools sit on top of OneLake and look at the exact same single copy of the data. You write the data once, and every tool in the Fabric ecosystem can instantly interact with it.
And because it's a unified platform, the security and governance policies just apply across the board automatically.
Exactly. Zero copies, zero duplication.
I can see why companies are rushing to adopt it, but the guide emphasizes that the talent pool of engineers who actually know how to build in Microsoft Fabric is incredibly shallow right now.
Which is the core of the current talent shortage in Hyderabad.
Everyone wants the new shiny thing.
Right. Everyone wants the efficiency of Microsoft Fabric, but the engineers who have spent the last 5 years mastering the old, fragmented way are scrambling to upskill. If you are a Microsoft Fabric engineer right now, you are basically holding the winning lottery ticket.
Well, that naturally brings us to the career ladder and the financial incentives, because subjecting yourself to the cognitive load of learning distributed computing, cloud architecture, and OneLake has to pay off.
It definitely pays off.
The 2026 guide provides very specific, verified salary benchmarks. Let's look at the inflection points. It starts with junior roles, 0 to 2 years of experience. They're commanding between 4 and 7 lakhs per annum, or LPA.
Right. And at that junior tier, your focus is highly tactical.
What are they doing day to day?
You're writing SQL queries, you're monitoring existing pipelines to make sure they didn't fail overnight, and you're just getting comfortable with the sheer scale of the Azure ecosystem.
You're learning the topography of the kitchen, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. You're a line cook.
But the first major jump happens at the mid-level, 2 to 5 years. The guide provides a verified Glassdoor average for March 2026 of 9.05 LPA, with a range stretching up to 15.75 LPA.
That's a significant bump.
What changes in the day-to-day to justify that jump?
One word, autonomy. At the mid-level, you are no longer just monitoring pipelines. You are designing end-to-end ETL and ELT architectures independently.
So they trust you to build from scratch.
Yeah. When a new data source is acquired, you are the one deciding how it gets ingested, how it gets transformed to Databricks, and where it lives. You become the actual backbone of the data engineering team.
Moving up again, we hit the senior Azure data engineer, 5 to 8 years of experience, earning between 15 and 25 LPA.
The stakes get higher here.
And finally, at the top of the pyramid, the leads and architects with 10 plus years of experience are commanding 28 to 45 LPA. So what does this all mean? When you look at the progression from 4 LPA to 45 LPA, the required skill set seems to fundamentally shift away from just writing code.
That's the secret. The transition from tactical execution to strategic design is where the massive salary multipliers live.
An architect isn't spending their day writing Python scripts, I assume.
Definitely not. They are solving complex structural problems. They handle CI/CD continuous integration and continuous deployment,
ensuring that when 50 different engineers update their code, the entire global system doesn't crash.
Exactly. But more importantly, at the senior and architect levels, your primary concern becomes cloud economics.
Managing the bill.
Precisely. Cloud computing is incredibly expensive. If a mid-level engineer writes an inefficient Apache Spark job that takes 6 hours to run on a massive cluster of virtual machines every single night,
the cloud compute bill at the end of the month will be astronomical.
Right. So a senior engineer looks at that job, rewrites the underlying logic to optimize the distributed processing, and cuts the runtime down to 20 minutes.
Wow.
That optimization alone saves the company millions of dollars annually. That is exactly why they are paid 45 LPA.
And the source also points out a nuance in who is paying these salaries. It explicitly states that product companies and those global capability centers we discussed often pay a significant premium over traditional IT services firms.
Yes, the GCCs have deep pockets.
Plus, there is an immediate scarcity premium for anyone holding those specialized Microsoft Fabric skills.
I mean, if you possess a rare architectural skill that a multinational corporation desperately needs to unify their global data strategy, your leverage in salary negotiations is immense.
Knowing the financial destination is highly motivating, but how do you actually navigate the path to get there?
That's the tricky part.
Especially because, as the text urgently warns, the landscape of certifications just underwent a massive earthquake.
Oh, yes.
We need to talk about the roadmap, and more importantly, we need to talk about the DP203 trap.
This is undoubtedly the most critical, actionable piece of intelligence in the entire guide for anyone looking to enter the field right now.
Okay, so the overarching path seems logical. Learn the fundamentals of SQL and Python, build real-world Azure projects, and validate your knowledge with certifications.
Standard playbook so far.
Right. The certification path goes from AZ-900 for Azure Fundamentals to DP-900 for Data Fundamentals, and culminates in the DP-700, which is the Fabric Data Engineer Associate Certification. There is also an optional DP-600 for Advanced Analytics.
Yep.
But here's where it gets really interesting. The guide waves a massive red flag regarding the DP203 exam.
What's fascinating here is how quickly the tech education industry can fall behind the actual technology.
The guide states plainly that the DP203 exam, which was the absolute gold standard for Azure data engineers for years, was officially retired on March 31st, 2025.
It is dead.
It's entirely gone. It has been replaced by the fabric-focused DP700. And the text explicitly warns that if you are evaluating a training provider in 2026 and their curriculum is built around preparing you for the DP203,
you need to run in the opposite direction. It acts as an incredible litmus test for the quality of the education you are receiving. If your training academy is still teaching the fragmented, outdated architecture of DP203, they are fundamentally failing to equip you for the Microsoft Fabric reality that employers are desperately hiring for.
You're literally paying money to learn digital history, not modern engineering.
Exactly.
But let me push back on the certifications entirely for a second. Does passing a multiple choice test for the DP700 actually mean you can do the job?
No.
Will an architecture team at a GCC hire someone just because they have a Microsoft badge on their LinkedIn profile?
The guide is very clear on this.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. The certification gets your resume past the automated HR filters and the initial recruiter screening. It proves you understand the vocabulary.
But what actually gets you the job offer?
The portfolio.
They want to see the plumbing.
They want concrete proof that you can build a kitchen. The source states that a portfolio showcasing 2 or 3 robust end-to-end data pipelines built with your own hands, utilizing Azure Data Factory, Databricks, and Fabric.
That will be a resume stuffed with empty buzzwords every single time.
Every time. A hiring manager in Hyderabad is looking at your GitHub repository. They want to see your code.
They want to know that if they hire you on a Monday, you aren't going to accidentally delete their data lake on Wednesday.
Bestly, you validate with the certification, but you prove your competence with the project.
Let's pull all of this together. We've mapped out a landscape where Azure data engineering, particularly within the gravity well of Hyderabad in 2026, is an incredibly structured, lucrative career path.
It really is.
The demand is being driven by the shift toward global capability centers, the multi-year backlog of cloud migrations, and the revolutionary unifying architecture of Microsoft Fabric.
And honestly, it is a profession shielded from a lot of the volatility we see in other sectors of tech, simply because the underlying problem, managing chaotic data at scale, is never going to disappear.
And for you listening right now, the roadmap is clear. Master SQL and Python. Avoid the outdated DP203 trap at all costs. Aim directly for the DP700 certification to prove your Fabric knowledge. And most crucially, start building real-world pipelines to prove you can execute.
But before we wrap up, this raises an important question based on a brief, almost throwaway line in the source text. It completely reframes why this job is so deeply entrenched.
Oh, what line is that?
The text notes that, quote, you cannot build reliable AI on messy data.
Wait, let me challenge that. The entire tech industry is breathlessly obsessed with artificial intelligence right now.
True.
We are told these massive large language models and AI agents are borderline geniuses. If AI is so incredibly smart, why can't it just ingest the messy data, figure out the currency conversions, fix the dates, and clean the swamp itself? Why do we still need human engineers manually building pipelines?
Because AI is an engine, and data is the fuel. An AI model possesses zero inherent intelligence.
Right.
It only knows the patterns it has observed in the data it was trained on.
Right.
If you feed an AI a swamp of duplicated records, corrupted metrics, and mismatched currencies, it doesn't know it's being fed poison.
It just accepts it.
It simply learns the poison. It will confidently generate utterly disastrous insights, and it will do so at blinding speed.
So, going back to our kitchen analogy, the AI is the world's most sophisticated multi-million dollar chef.
Yep.
But if the data engineer hasn't meticulously organized the pantry, washed the ingredients, and verified the quality of the meat,
the AI chef is just going to confidently cook you a plate of garbage.
Wow. Exactly.
The AI revolution is entirely dependent on the structural integrity of the data beneath it. Without the data engineers acting as the gatekeepers, filtering the chaos into clean, reliable pipelines, the AI models have absolutely nothing to learn from.
So the people laying the invisible plumbing are the ones actually controlling the future of the technology. I love that.
It's the reality of the industry right now.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the world of Azure data engineering. We hope this armed you with a clear map of the 2026 landscape, helped you dodge a few outdated certifications, and maybe inspired you to go build some digital infrastructure of your own. Keep questioning the tools, keep building the foundation, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.